This is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin. Okay, so Breaking Bad is over. It's still fall, and that means a new network TV season is just getting started. TV critic Eric Dagans is here, and he'll tell us about the shows you won't want to miss, and maybe some you should. That's in just a few minutes. But first, what about Latinos who've made a mark on TV and elsewhere in Hollywood? What names come to mind? Rita Moreno, Desi Arnaz, Jimmy Smits, Jennifer Lopez, John Leguizamo? Now, the name Rick Nahara may not be familiar to you, but his work most certainly is. He's a jack of all trades, having worked as an actor, a writer on cutting-edge television shows like Mad TV and In Living Color. He's been an executive, a producer, a consultant whose work has helped many other performers get the attention they deserve. But now, following the advice of one of his mentors, he's telling his own story his way, and with that, turning a spotlight onto the experiences of other Latinos in Hollywood. It's called Almost White, Forced Confessions of a Latino in Hollywood, and Rick Nahara is with us now. Welcome. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Why forced confessions?
Well, you know, I never want to tell this story. So and the publisher and the editor's like, well, do you really want to say this? And I go, no, not really. And I wanted to write other things. And then they said, write about your life. And I thought, who's going to really want to hear about my life? And then I realized my life, just looking at it individually, really tells the whole story of the Latino experience in America. So that's how I approached it, was that, you know, anything happening in my life, I put in the book. And it exposed what was going on with Latinos and the greater.
One of the things about the book that is striking is that you kind of toggle between these really funny episodes, but some really terrible experiences. You know, starting with the one that opens the book, where you had this really scary account of a bad case of pneumonia that you had not treated. And it caused you to fall, and you wind up in the ICU. You have a seizure, you fall, and you land in the ICU.
Yeah. Yeah, but way before Obamacare or anything else could have helped me.
So that is what kind of forced you to, or encouraged you? Forced is the word you used to kind of...
I'm one of those writers that doesn't like to write, but I've written so much material, it's ridiculous. And so when the coma happened, basically, I went through a seizure, had hit my head, nearly bled to death, and went into a coma. And my brain was swelling and all that. I looked like I had no future. And even when my doctor had saw me, they said, you know, Rick may not come back normal, which my wife was fine with that because she's like, well, he was never normal in the first place. So, you know, it's not going to change a thing. It's like, I'm not going to come back as an accountant, you know, and then it would have been really bad.
I think I'm going to call her to second source that.
Well, I came out of the coma and, you know, I really looked at my life and I said, I wanted to chronicle it. I wanted to bring it down and talk about it in a very human, honest way. Is that, yeah, I went through a coma, a seizure, all these horrible things. It was in the ICU for nearly 2 weeks. And during that time, you really contemplate your life. So that was the beginning of the book.
You talk about the fact that you said you were lucky your wife was Anglo. Why is that?
I said I was lucky my wife was Anglo because a Latino, when they would have discovered my body, would have got an alibi immediately afterwards. You know, because she was holding my body and doing that stuff, and that's all DNA evidence. She would have been so in trouble if I had died because, you know, a Latino is like, no, I'm there's no way I'm touching him. Call up my aunt. I was at your house. Remember, I was there having menudo. Okay. But she didn't think that way. She was holding me and crying. And
well, that sounds pretty scary, and I'm very glad that you made it.
Yeah, no, so am I. It's strange because you want to remember how our lives all are miracles, you know, and that's the beauty of it. And the coma reminded me that every day was a miracle, and I was so happy to do something, leave something behind.
But going back to the title again, Almost White, could you just read me a passage from the book where you talk about that?
Sure. In every story, there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. More than anywhere else in Hollywood, the story commences when you are defined and cast as a type. I was cast as the Latino. I always had to fight for my identity because when you're a Latino to white America, you're not black and you're not white. What you are is almost white. Now lying in the hospital, I was almost dead. They gave me a syringe full of sleep, and I drifted into darkness, tied to the bed with IVs in my arms and a tube down my throat. I looked like a man with no future. Yet with no future, I dreamt of my past, almost white.
Well, you know, part of what you're doing with this book is you're giving yourself permission to kind of really talk about what that has been like. Now, one of the things you talk about in the book is how the options for Latino actors and actresses are very limited, or have been very limited. But you also wrote for two shows that were known for having diverse casts. You created these opportunities and for taking on race-based humor. So I'd like to play a clip from a sketch that you wrote for In Living Color. The premise of the sketch is that the famed Latino actor Edward James Olmos is cleaning up after the L.A. riots. So let's take a listen.
Oh, yeah.
Here you go.
All right, people, let's go. Listen to me. Come here. I want to pontificate. You have wallpapered. You have painted. You've saved thousands of remodeling dollars. But what lies ahead is the biggest job of all.
And what's that?
Fixing my face. Everybody get the putty knives. Make me look good. I want to be governor one day.
Where did you get the idea for that?
You know, I after the riots, and I love Edward James Olmos. He's a very close friend. He's one of the biggest heroes in my life, and so that's he remembers that. He always remembers that sketch. But I got the idea from sketches after the riots that happened in L.A. And I got attacked during the riots. I was wearing a suit, unfortunately, and I was walking out during the height of the riots. I was listening to my DVDs and wasn't listening to the radio. I see the smoke and all this stuff, and I'm like, oh, what's going on here? Wow, check this out. A lot of smoke, a lot of fire. Wow, a lot of minorities running around. This isn't interesting. And so I got jumped. It was like five black guys and four Mexicans. First, I was happy. It's good to see Mexicans and Latinos together. I mean, and blacks together. It's just a wonderful feeling of diversity. And so they were together and basically beating me up. And so I was like, you know, I turned all ethnic. I was like, you know, what are you saying, man? What are you saying? You know, get off of me. You know, and they're like, wow, the white guy got possessed by a Mexican. So I survived the riots. And during that, you know, Eddie said, let's clean up L.A. So I went with him to clean up a group of, you know, supposedly bad parts of L.A. But the liberal white group that I was with, we varied off the track in Compton and ended up in a neighborhood that was just a neighborhood. So I remember this black woman came out holding a little one-eyed chihuahua in her hand going, get off our lawn. There's no riot here. Get off the lawn. That's my house. This is my lawn. Get off of my lawn. So these liberals were fighting for a piece of trash in her front lawn, and I just went, this is ironic and so strange, and I have to write about it. And that was it. That's where the sketch came from. And Eddie would be with me, and he'd be cleaning up areas and stuff like that. And he's a good man, but I've got to spoof it. You know,
but you know what else is funny? That's Jim Carrey.
Oh, yeah.
The voice that you heard is Jim Carrey playing Edward James Olmos.
Yeah, it's Jim Carrey playing Edward James Olmos and Jamie Foxx.
And Jamie Foxx was the other voice that you heard. Okay, but you have the white guy playing one of the big Latino stars. I'm just saying.
You know, I know. But you know something?
Isn't that...
The bigger picture was, hey, Eddie Olmos was getting a national recognition being spoofed because I was spoofing Cher. I was spoofing a lot of big stars. And that's the way I looked at it. And tell you the truth, Jim Carrey at that point was so hot. But it was just more the story. The things I would do, a lot of times I would write as a writer. I'd say a group of mariachis and four Latino men, you know, in a scene. All of a sudden, I'd look around, and there's a mariachis, all these Latinos, and they're at the catering with me. And I would provide work for Latinos left and right. And my show, Latinologues, that went to Broadway, did the same thing. It was over 150 actors in it. So sometimes people look at comedy and get, you know, offended or but they're not seeing the bigger picture. The bigger picture is I'm providing a showcase for Latinos all the way to Broadway, which is unheard of. It was the first real successful Latino show that ever happened after...
John Leguizamo's
which
I can't, the title of which I cannot say. And if you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Rick Najera. He's an actor, writer, director, producer. Now he's written a memoir. It's called Almost White, Forced Confessions of a Latino in Hollywood. Let me just play a clip from your Broadway show, which you wrote and acted in, wildly popular production called Latinologues. And for those who might not be familiar, I'd like to play a clip of one of the characters which is particularly popular, if you don't mind my saying that. It's a border agent named Buford Gomez.
Buford Gomez.
And here it is.
I put the panic to the Hispanic. I put the pepper spray to Jose. I put the baton to Juan. Deportation, my business, and business is good. Now I may see a strange-looking car coming at me. I say, hey, you with the iHeart, Puerto Vallarta on your car, pull it on over. Hey, I smell chicharrones. That whole family pulled over. And I knock on the trunk of the car. Now, no Mexican can ever resist this. You knock on the trunk, you say, que viva Mexico.
Viva, viva, viva.
This was always one of your more popular characters, both with
Anglo and Latino
everyone, you know, loves. Audiences. Well, why do you think that is?
I think because Buford says what Outlaw, he's kind of like an Archie Bunker character. He can actually say what most people are thinking, and he makes malapropisms and his whole thing about, I put the panic to the Hispanic. He's very proud of his job, and there's a lot of Latinos that work for the government are extremely, I mean, half the Border Patrol is Mexican, which to me is always ironic. But they're very, you know, the way they have it, there's a right way and a wrong way, and this is the way we do it, and they're very conservative. So it was easy for me to pull, you know, bring that character up, because I would just get stopped at the border all the time. Hmm. There was a guy coming up to me that, you know, was way browner than I ever was, and looks like, you know, John Huston extra in Treasure of Sierra Madre. And he'd be, you know, knocking on my trunk, going, okay, anyone in there? And I'd be looking, going,
and you'd be
on.
Like, dude, I was born in California. What are you talking about?
Yeah, and guess where this happened? It happened in San Clemente border checkpoint. So it's almost 100 miles inside California. I'm being pulled over and checked. So to me, it's an irony. When my father fought in World War II, my uncle died in World War II in a Japanese concentration camp. Mm. My father was in Vietnam. My cousins were in Iraq, Afghanistan, places like that. Mm. And that's the whole point. As Latinos, we've fought and died for this country and have contributed majorly to this country. I say Latinos are the solution, never the problem.
You know, it's interesting, though, that you still write about the fact that, well, you say this in the book, that all people of color must, as actors, play roles normally not written by people of color. Okay, more specifically, roles normally written by white males. The Hollywood writers' room, even today, is seldom diverse. It's changing, but the change is slow. I'm bringing this up because we're kind of at the beginning of a new season. Mm-hmm. So there always is talk about whether the casts are diverse or not diverse. But the writers' room, you're saying, is still not diverse?
It's not me saying. It's actually the Writers Guild of America says it. Mm-hmm. The statistics are pretty horrible. It's normally young white males.
And why is that?
Well, it's not that Hollywood is this evil empire doing these things. Hollywood is actually most likely a scared white 20-year-old boy. You know, it's their kind of thing is that they don't know other Latinos. They don't know African Americans. They don't hang out with people. It's a very segregated world of Hollywood that you hang out, you give jobs to your friends. So if you're not part of that boys' club, you're not going to get the job.
But why even now? I mean, it's interesting that those that notice this sort of thing focus on the diversity of casts, but nobody seems to write about the writer's room except for a few writers like yourself. And I just wonder, why does that not change? Well, is it because people don't know? They don't see it? People, it's invisible?
People don't know. It's sad. A lot of times the writers, we're the guys in the back room, so no one sees us, but they don't realize we're the ones that are changing everything. That's, if we write it on a page, if it says, you know, an African-American male, you know, two Asian women and, you know, a Mexican man enter a room, that's a writer that wrote that. And that means that's casting. So the casting director gets that, and they have to cast it that way. So the power is really in the writers more than ever. You know, and I work for, I'm treated very well. I work for CBS. I have an office there, and they've been great with the diversity program, which I helped create with Fern Orenstein and, you know, Tiffany Smith on Hawaii and Josie Thomas and people. And I look at Nina Tassler and all those guys. They're trying, but it's not mean-spirited. They're actually saying, okay, how do we do this? What do we do? So it really starts with the writers, and until the Georgia National Guard marches me into a studio and says he has to be here writing on a show, it's not going to happen. And there are Latino shows that I couldn't get on as a writer.
You actually tell a story about that where there were Latino performers who wouldn't hire you for your shows. You talk about one in particular.
Yeah, that happened. It was a comedy show that was on Comedy Central, and it was a sketch show, and I went to the star, and I know him. He's Latino. And I don't want to say his name, but...
You made a point of saying it wasn't George Lopez.
No, George has been great.
It wasn't Paul Rodriguez.
And it wasn't Gabriel Iglesias.
It wasn't John Leguizamo?
It wasn't John Leguizamo.
Okay.
So the point was, and I don't want to out anyone because I want to be positive, is that on that show, he's like, I was told by my agent, hey, he doesn't want you on the show because you're too Mexican. You write too Latino. And that was a problem. And I said, you know, and I confronted him with it later on. I said, listen, I heard this story. And he goes, yeah, it's true. He goes, I had a lot of pressure to make sure my show was whiter. Hmm. And so I don't know if that was true or not, but a lot of times that's just plain Latin self-loathing. When you go, I want something better, give me the white writer.
What do you think your career stands for? What lesson would you want people to draw from your career? Not that, that it's over with, but you know, that just taking the pause offered by your fateful trip to the ICU, which caused you to write this book. What lesson do you want people to draw?
I think I want people to draw that I'm inclusive, not exclusive. So I think I want to be the guy that's the bridge, you know, not the barrier. I grew up in the border, so being a bridge is a great thing because borders don't work. You know, the Great Wall of China didn't work. The, you know, Berlin Wall didn't work. So you need bridges between cultures and people, and that's what I want to be.
Do you think it will be different when your kids are adults?
Yeah, I've already noticed it. I mean, my little kid, Julian, is a Mexican. He's half white and half Mexican. People used to kid me because I married a white girl, Irish, which my dad was worried. He was like, you're going to have double alcoholics. Don't do it. But we had beautiful children. We still, you know, we're still married and we have these kids. They all speak Spanish. They live in both cultures and both worlds really quite easily. And Julian, of course, he's a great-looking kid, and I'm walking down the red carpet.
If you do say so yourself.
Yeah, I do say it. It's not me. Modest. Everyone does.
And modest, too. His dad's so modest.
His dad's... I'm not good-looking. He's great-looking. I belong on radio. He's a really handsome kid. So, you know, and he's already... You know, who does he hang out with? Edward James Olmos is his godfather. You know, such and such is this person. That person's that. So he sees Hollywood as a family. And he's exposed to it very much so. So if he ever did choose a career in Hollywood and worked in the media, he has a much better access than I did. So it's a generational thing. It is changing. And guys like Robert Rodriguez who have, you know, El Rey, his network, and different people like that, we're all slowly changing the dial. And it takes a long time for this change to happen. And it's sad because our worlds are better off with all of us included in them.
Rick Najera's latest book, his new memoir, is called Almost White, Forced Confessions of a Latino in Hollywood. And he was kind enough to join us from our studios at NPR West, which is in Culver City, California. Rick Najera, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.